Chapter 1. Find a Man's Weak Spot. By the time Benny Rotolo was in Lido, New York for a week, he had a plan, a partner, and a line on a patsy with access to big money. As he waited in the Model T, twilight bled into evening, and Benny thought about what a swell education Chicago's North Side gang had given him. Dean O'Banion, Jaime Weiss, Bugs Moran, in their own way, each had taught him how to find a man's weak spot. The Model T was parked in the lot next to the huge Lido Premium Copper and Brass Rolling Mill, which stretched into the night for two city blocks. Five stories of red brick full of giant forges and block and tackle machinery that shaped crucibles of molten metal into copper sheeting to build everything from tea kettles to telephone switchboards. Its iron-framed windows glinted in the moonlight. Compared to the mill, the Lido Premium office building on the other side of the lot was no bigger than a shoebox. A light shone in one of the windows. Another lit the entrance. Benny squirmed a bit in the passenger seat, trying to find a comfortable position for the Colt pocket hammerless concealed in the inner breast pocket of his $60 suit from Marshall Field's. The wool suit had been right for windy Chicago, but upstate New York's summer humidity turned it into a steam bath. He couldn't afford to buy a new suit until the business got going. The few hundred in his pocket when he left Chicago was running out fast. The mill faced Hamilton Street in the section of the city known as East Lido. At this time of night, any road in Chicago would be clogged with cars and buses and people heading to the next good time, but not here. From where they were parked, Benny could see a sliver of Hamilton Street. The wide boulevard was empty and quiet. Perched on the Mohawk River, Lido was right smack in the middle of the state of New York, and duller than dishwater. Summer nightlife meant a dance at St. Rocco's Catholic Church, a lecture at the Women's Institute, or a moving picture at the Strand Theater. 6 years into Prohibition, too. Like nobody knew how to take advantage of a good thing. A smart fella could step into empty shoes, so to speak. East Lido was home to Italian mill workers like his cousin Nick Procopio, who lived crammed into the warren of narrow lanes above Hamilton Street. At this hour of the night, those chumps were playing cards at a neighborhood fixture called the Galliano Club. Nick used to belong to the Galliano Club, but not anymore. That suited Benny just fine. It meant Nick was available to go into business with him. Behind the wheel of the Model T, his cousin produced a hunk of cheese and half a loaf of crusty bread from a wrinkled napkin. The smell of ripe provolone thickened the night air.
"You gotta eat now?" Benny demanded.
"I worked all day," Nick said, and held out a fistful of food. "You want some?"
"Jesus, Nick, no." Benny waved the cheese stink away. "You sure Fisher works late every Friday, all by himself?" Benny had asked the question a dozen times. The situation was too good, too easy.
"I told you. I seen the night watchman's logs. You think Fisher's dipping his hand into the petty cash?"
Nick grunted and chewed.
"What else would he be doing?"
Deputy foreman of the Lido Premium Mill, Nick was a bull of a man, with shoulders that jutted like twin cliffs, hands the size of iceboxes, and a pumpkin head that sat directly on his shoulders. A frayed bandana was tied around the spot where his neck should be, distracting from an oil-stained canvas shirt, dirty dungarees, and the steel-toed boots he wore to the mill 6 days a week. Benny's cousin might look like a roughneck and be saddled with a horse-faced wife and four snot-nosed kids, but Nick was smart enough. When Benny appeared on his doorstep, having fled Chicago one step ahead of Al Capone's enforcer, Frank Nitti, and his trigger-happy torpedoes, Nick didn't flinch. Not only that, but he helped Benny make a plan that was going to make both of them richer than the Rockefellers. According to Nick, this Fisher fella was somebody who could be persuaded to help.
Benny had lots of experience in the persuasion business. It all began in Chicago when Jaime Weiss throttled a fella named Tricker Egan in the back of a car that Benny happened to be driving. That was before Dino Banyan died and Jaime took over the Northside gang. Benny was sure that when he had enough dough to go back to Chicago, Jaime would help him take down Capone and Nitty and the rest of the Chicago outfit. Slouched against the passenger door, Benny adjusted the Colt again. His thoughts moved on to dames. In Chicago, his dark hair, blue eyes, expensive clothes, and confident swagger attracted them like bees to honey. Made their clothes fall off, too. Too bad the blonde he'd picked up on the way out of Chicago was old news. Too prim. Meanwhile, East Lido was a bastion of Italian women like Nick's wife. One eyebrow and a pack of mewling kids.
"He shut off the light," Nick gulped down his last mouthful.
The low brick office building was dark now, except for the entrance. Benny sat up. A slight figure in a suit and fedora came out, pausing under the light to put a key in the lock. Fisher, the accountant. The fella looked to be 10 years or so older than Benny, maybe 35 or 36 years old. A plain face, but dressed real swell in a seersucker suit and bow tie. White handkerchief in the breast pocket. Polished shoes. A signet ring glinted as he locked the door. Somebody liked expensive things. Obviously unaware that he was being watched, Fisher headed toward the only other vehicle parked in the lot, an older Ford. Nick and Benny met him halfway.
"Evening, Mr. Fisher," Nick said.
"Ah, Procopio," Fisher said with a visible start. "The whistle blew hours ago. What are you doing here so late?"
"Need to talk to you," Nick said, looming over the smaller man.
"Can't it wait until Monday?"
"I brung my cousin."
Benny stuck out his hand, real friendly. "I'm Benny Rotolo, Nick's cousin. A pleasure to meet you. I'm Owen Forbes Fisher, the accountant for Lido Premium." Fisher shook hands, evidently relieved to see that Benny wasn't another mill worker like Nick. Clearly admired the suit, as well as the black fedora that Benny had hastily lifted from a bespoke men's shop on his way out of Chicago. "I've got a business idea," Benny said. "Nick here had the notion that you could help us get it off the ground."
"Is this related to Lido Premium?"
Fisher asked, looking from Benny to Nick and back again.
"Speak to Henry Blick on Monday. He's the operations manager."
"No, this is up your alley."
Benny moved closer. "You being the money man and all, I could use your expert investment advice."
"Expert investment advice?"
Fisher preened a bit.
"Exactly."
Benny rubbed his hands together. "What would you say to becoming a partner in a business with a guaranteed 200% return?" Fisher's eyes nearly popped out of his head.
200%?
Benny nodded. "I'm from Chicago, looking to set up a Chicago-style business. A partner with some seed money to invest could recoup their investment in 30 days. Even less. Everything after that is money in your pocket, free and clear."
"There is only one business with a return like that," Fisher said.
"That's right," Benny agreed. Still real friendly. "The beer racket." Fisher took a step back.
"I can't help you with anything like that."
"You got a nice position here, I take it."
Benny cut his eyes to the office building.
"But you're still driving yesterday's Ford. Bet you'd like a LaSalle or a Packard.
It's not worth going to jail over a car,"
Fisher said. Benny was still his best friend.
"Bet you got a wife?"
"Yes." Fisher swallowed hard, making his Adam's apple jump like a champagne cork.
"Cynthia. She like pretty things?"
"Yes."
"Guaranteed 200% return," Benny emphasized.
Fisher dabbed at his upper lip with a white hanky from his breast pocket.
I don't have any money to invest.
Nobody's expecting you to invest your own money. Benny pointed a thumb toward the office building. Not when this place is lousy with it.
Unaware of his own move, Fisher's free hand pressed on his jacket pocket to keep it closed.
Guilty. The best kind of patsy.
We need cash and equipment, Benny went on. $1,000, more or less, plus the kind of equipment you order for the mill.
Nick will tell you what to get. You place the order and square it with the books. Me and Nick handle the rest. See? Nothing too complicated.
I'd be stealing from my employer, embezzling.
Borrowing, Benny countered.
Stealing, Fisher repeated, trying to sound indignant.
You want me to steal, fake receipts, and cook the books.
You're doing it now, Benny said coolly. What's the difference?
Fisher's face twisted in alarm.
Who told you that?
Quick as a wink, Nick smacked away Fisher's hand, allowing Benny to find out what was hidden inside the pocket. He pulled out a couple of folded bills and nearly laughed.
$10? In Chicago, you can't even get laid for $10.
That's mine, Fisher gasped. It's none of your business.
It is now. Benny grinned and cut his eyes to the office building. You take it out of petty cash? What would what's-his-name, Blick, think about that if Nick here told him?
Fisher's chin dimpled like he was going to cry.
Cynthia wants a mink jacket.
What else does she want?
Benny stuffed the bills back into the other man's pocket.
Take the same risk for our little business proposition, and you could buy her the moon.
You don't understand what you're asking, Fisher gulped.
A brewery needs industrial equipment like chemical tanks, hoses, pumps, heating coils. It's an expensive proposition.
See? Benny said to Nick. Man knows what he's talking about. Just the partner we need.
I'd have to perform miracles of accounting to hide paying for it all.
But you know how, Benny said leadingly.
False receipts, change to inventory accounting, and the quarterly report?
No, it's impossible.
200% return on investment, Benny reminded him.
Fisher plied the handkerchief against the sweat on his forehead.
Exactly where would this equipment go?
The old mill that burned down.
Nick crowded into the conversation.
On the river below the Settlers' Rest Cemetery. The stone pump house is still standing. Big enough, but you can't see it from any road.
The old mill? Fisher was agog. That riverfront property still belongs to Lido Premium and the Packard family.
Nobody goes there,
Nick growled.
But they could.
Then you'll see that they don't, Benny said. Fisher's face was shiny with sweat.
An illegal brewery at the old mill, built with funds embezzled from Lido Premium.
Dear Lord.
Benny grinned. The hook was in the fish's mouth. Nick and I will handle customers and delivery. We need cash for trucks and payroll until the beer sales start rolling in.
Won't take long. Lido is lousy with fellows who want beer when the whistle blows, and even more, they don't want to work in a mill no more.
We'd be partners?
Fisher dabbed again and again.
The three of us, splitting profits three ways?
Sure.
Benny stuck out his hand. The man was hooked.
Shall we shake on it?
I need some time to think about it, Fisher said, but he extended a limp paw.
Benny reeled him in the next night when they met up at Perk's Diner, a rough spot on the south side of Lido, lumped between the freight rail yard and a scrap heap. It was the kind of place that served soup and pie to Teamsters and stevedores. A blue neon sign advertised, "Fresh coffee, 24 hours. A row of Seen Better Days Fords nosed against the side of the building. Fisher was out of place, darting glances at the rough customers and fidgeting with excitement. Benny knew the feeling, knew what was going on in the accountant's head. Fisher was scared at the notion of being in the beer racket. But
It put some steel in his spine, too. He was going to be a rich gangster, not just some mealy-mouthed bookkeeper scamming petty cash. They ordered coffee and pie. Fisher produced a pocket-sized business ledger book covered in gray linen with maroon leather corners. Benny wrote, "The Lido Outfit," on the flyleaf, and they all signed their names. Then, they got down to business and hammered out the details. The equipment and supplies needed to be delivered fast. Fisher took the ledger book with him when he left Perks. Maybe the accountant thought it was some kind of insurance policy. Benny didn't care. The only insurance he needed was the Colt pocket hammerless and cops on his payroll. Through the plate glass window, Benny watched Fisher get in his Ford and rattle off across the gravel. "Got us a new pet, Nick. A dog who comes when you whistle." And all it took was writing names in a book. Nick grunted and shoveled in some apple pie. As Benny ate, his plans expanded. Once the beer racket was printing money, he'd collar other rackets. Protection, brothels, gambling, every racket from Buffalo to Albany would be his in the swath of money and power across his newly adopted state. He'd run it all from the finest speakeasy in New York. Al Capone's Four Deuces on Wabash Street in Chicago was a shack compared to what Benny had in mind. A floor show with a chorus line, gambling in the back, lottery sales, and girls turning tricks upstairs. Red velvet everywhere, crystal chandeliers, a bar as long as Hamilton Street, cocktails the size of punch bowls, torpedoes with Tommy guns to keep the peace, a road and back and a couple of extra Cadillacs for quick getaways. Capone had run Benny out of Chicago, but in 6 months, Benny was going to suck enough dough and firepower out of upstate New York to go back, join forces with Jaime again, and bust up Capone's Chicago outfit. Divvy up whatever was left standing. Benny was just about to tell Nick about the place he had in mind to transform into his new speakeasy when two blondes walked into the diner. One of them gave Benny an appraising look that melted into his slow smile, and he lost his train of thought.